On March 20th, 1989, Elisif, my eldest daughter, was born, and it was just about the happiest day of my life. 20 years later, her sister, our youngest daughter, Sophia, came to her in-denial parents and told us her mentor, her best friend and confidant, Elisif, was addicted to drugs. That set us off on 5 years of roller coaster, from lightness and hope to darkness and despair. When it was lightness and hope, it was all I wanted to do was to run to it. When it was darkness and despair, I just wanted to go the other way. On February 11th, 2014, Elisif relapsed, used heroin, and died. That set us off on a path. It's like being at the top of a reservoir and the dam bursts and all you can do is flow with the current. For my wife, that meant months of being depressed and then moving to Maine in August, needing to get away from all her old patterns. For me, it meant the New Day campaign, starting an arts-based initiative to challenge stigma associated with mental illness and addiction. It's why I get up in the morning. Working in the New Day campaign allows me to be with people who are hurting, for people who are judged just for the afflictions that they have, and it's the people I need to be with. In late December of 2014, I met Nikki. We met by happenstance, and after some confusion, we figured out that I wasn't interested in being a John for her, but was interested in her. I cared. She noticed. I gave her my number. She contacted me. I was happy to respond. And we actually fell into a kind of relationship. Always platonic, always legal, but intense and kind of crazy. We fell into a pattern. She would text me. I'm alone. I'm sad. I feel like killing myself. And I would text back. I'd say, do you want me to come over and make you waffles? So I'd come over and make her waffles, and it was 4:30 in the morning. Sometimes it was waffles. Sometimes it was shopping trips to Walmart. Sometimes it was trips to House of Pancakes. But I got real pleasure out of offering comforts. Anything I could do to protect her from the daily trauma of prostitution and the pain otherwise attended to by drugs. One day, Nikki said to me, Peter, I need to get off the crack and I need to stop prostituting and I need your help. And when she said that, the current that I was riding with Elisif's death got stronger, faster, and deeper. I began to hemorrhage money. Now, there was a sane part of myself that was watching me go down this insane ride. But not only was that sane part just standing on the sidelines, but it was kind of cheering me on from the sidelines, saying, just ride it. Just go with it. And it's what I did. What did that look like? Well, basically, I needed to be in Nikki's space. Her dark disturbances were like balm for my unquiet mind. Taking care of every single one of her needs was like dope for me. Holding her hand when she was dope sick was like crack. Wanting to get her into treatment and offering treatment at every opportunity never taken up on was like a craving. So it went, it just more and more, deeper and deeper. One day I showed up at her hotel room. She had texted me, and the door was wide open. The room was cleared out. There was a half unpacked bag on the threshold, and it looked like a crime scene. I tried calling Nikki. I couldn't get hold of her. and I lost it. I had a complete panic attack. I started crying uncontrollably. And what did I do? I called my rock. I called Serafina, my wife, who's up in Maine, but we're as in love as ever. We're as married as ever. We depend on each other as much as ever. And I called her up and I said, Nikki is gone. I don't know where she is. Serafina said, what else are you thinking? And I said, there are two images that keep flickering in and out of my head. Nikki, Elisif, Nikki, Elisif, Nikki, Elisif. And I can't stand the thought of never seeing her again. So Serafina talked me down. She said, breathe. She said, focus on acceptance because you can't control it. A little while later, Nikki called. She had just switched rooms. And when she called, I told her I was so happy that she was okay, that I was afraid I would never see her again, and that she was so important to me to have in my life. When Elisif was alive, the last thing I wanted to know were her dark spaces. And when she died, it was the thing I wanted to know more than anything. Being in Nikki's dark spaces was a way to be with, to accept, to get to know, and even to fall in love with Elisif's dark spaces. I was so grateful for that. And the other thing, standing by Nikki, always holding her hand, never leaving her, no matter how dark it got for her, was a way of making amends. Because when Elisif was alive, I can't help but believe, I had so much fear. I had so much fear when she was alive. And when she was dead, I had no more fear. And once I was no longer afraid, I realized that I'd left her alone in her dark spaces more than I needed to. And that was a heavy thing to carry. And in being with Nikki, I was making amends. And in making amends, I could forgive myself. And through Nikki, through Elisif bringing Nikki into my life, I could find a kind of redemption. How could I not fall madly in love with Nikki? So on March 2nd, Nikki was arrested. I was away on a family vacation when it happened. I came back. She was in jail. She went through withdrawal, finally. She has been clean now for more than a month. She's starting a rehabilitation program in jail. I write her. We talk on the phone. I visit her. We end our conversations with, I love you. She calls me her safe space, and I think of her as mine. And I don't know where this is going, but I do know that sanity has returned, that I can look back on this wild cascade with Nikki and see it as really crazy. But now my feet are on the ground. I'm standing solid. I know where I stand in relationship to her. And there's something really valuable I've learned that I hope I never forget. And that's that sometimes the exact right thing to do is to go crazy in order to become whole and well. Thank you.